Hello.
How are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. Happy to be on with you, my friend.
You slacker.
I know. Slacker. I am. I can't help it.
You're fired.
Can't help it. Sometimes you have to, you know, recalibrate yourself a little bit.
Oh, buddy, trust me. I'm all about recalibration.
I know you are.
All about it. Before we kick off, I want to wish the Dreamboat himself a happy birthday, because I'm sure he'll be listening. Today's his birthday, so happy birthday, Dreamboat.
Dang it, if only this episode was out on his birthday. Then well, maybe we can have an update next episode to find out if the Rainbow Unicorn got all of his spanking.
How was your birthday?
My birthday was great. I got all of my spankings.
Did you?
That made it fantastic.
Did you? Very nice.
Yeah.
Did you have a good trip?
I did. I went, hence why we haven't podcasted in a short time, a long time, a very long time.
I got to say, though, for all the haters, and by haters, I mean Gundy.
Yes.
You know, even though there hasn't been an episode in only 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is going out tomorrow, so it'll be 11 days.
Right.
We have not recorded, Nick, since October 20th.
That's true. That's true. But
so,
that's why you stockpile, and I think both of us thought we stockpiled correctly, knowing that this trip to Phoenix, Arizona was coming up, but yet we didn't stockpile correctly. I'll put that on myself.
Oh, it was pretty close.
It was pretty close.
It was pretty close. Anyway, so tell me about your trip.
The trip was a trip that, for my birthday, Julie, the cruise director, my mom offered or asked both of us to come out. She was busy and she goes, "You should still go for your birthday. How expensive can it be?" And sure enough, I mean, because of the situation, we had to look for cheap flights. So I was flying out on Southwest, doing those, what the heck are they? The want to get away fares or whatever the hell they are?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, those sales that they do.
Yeah.
So the best and cheapest time to fly out was like the last flight of the day. So I found one flying out at like, I don't know, 11:15 at night, which was very late. But the flight was, the price of the flight was almost the same price as all the taxes and everything that they put on top of it. I'm sure you've dealt with this because you just flew your daughter to Detroit on one of these cheap flights.
Yep.
And the price of the flight was $57, but I think all the taxes and fees, I think those came to $42, which
sounds
was
right.
Freaking crazy.
Yeah.
So the most expensive thing was the extended parking. That's always pricey in Chicago. That's never fun. That's just, you pretty much have to eat that.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, flew out. It was the longest time I've ever spent to visit my mother, which was 10 days. Well worth it. It sort of recalibrated me, the situation that I'm in, and sort of put a positive spin on everything. It's sort of nice to step away from a situation that sort of beats you up a little bit mentally.
Yeah.
And just recalibrate and try to, you know, figure out different approaches and try not to pin everything on yourself, which, you know, I think that's normal. I think a lot of people would do that. So come back, revved up, the batteries recharged, feeling good, looking good. All right.
All right. Sexy time. Yeah.
And going to Phoenix was an eye-opener. My mom, her husband doesn't do, and by the way, her name's Jana. Martin, we might have a new female listener to the show.
Oh, Lord. So I have to keep it clean? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying when we throw out Nelson, turn off the podcast. Now we have to say Jana and Nelson, turn off the podcast. Because she texted me today and was like, "Are podcasts all video?" And I was like, "No, they're not." And I'm like, "Shoot, I know exactly where that's going." I'm like, "Oh boy,
Hilarious.
So my Jana's husband, my stepfather, he's not really a person that is all. He would say he's adventurous. He's not really adventurous. So she has all of these, because they've only been there for about 3 years, and she has all these sites and attractions around the Phoenix area to go visit. But whenever she asks him, he's always like, well, what's there? How long is it going to take to get there? Are we really only going to go for that? How do we know it's good? And he's not like, I love food. So you could just tell me like, hey, there's a great burger place, blah, blah, blah. You know, in this town, we should go there, or there's a good breakfast place. And I'd be like, but usually I'm all up for like, yeah, let's just go walking or driving around a city we don't know and, you know, see what it has to offer. So she wanted to do that. So pretty much almost every day we would take day trips out, and we saw this really neat, I guess it would be stereotypical, Western looking town, which was pretty interesting, but you could tell it wasn't from like the 1800s, that it was brand new money.
Oh yeah.
But they modeled it after a Western town. But still, it was neat because it was an artist community. So there was a lot of like, there was one store that all they did was handcrafted art, but everything that they did was related to like the four elements or natural elements. So it was all like metal work, rock work. Like it was all really interesting, glass. It was really interesting, some of the artwork. And that was a neat little area that I definitely want to take Julie, the cruise director, next time we go.
What was the name of that place? That sounds familiar.
Oh, I want to say it was like Crystal Creek.
Okay. Never mind. It's not what I was thinking of.
Okay. And I could be wrong for sure. Like I said, we went to pretty much a day trip every day. The other one that definitely left in my memory was we went to Tempe because I wanted to see what a university town would look like, because I always see them during sporting events whenever they go to and from commercial. It'll always be like, here's the scene, downtown Tempe. And they would show you the street activity. And I'm always like, oh, that's pretty cool. It looks like a neat little hustle bustle, you know, college town. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting to go visit. But the one that really stuck out to me was we went to this one town specifically because they had a modern art museum. And I don't think we've ever discussed modern art or where you stand with modern art.
I love modern art.
I've been to many like modern art installations. And this was the first one that actually, I think, did it. Maybe it guided you, took your hand a little bit much. But I actually liked it because every one of the installations, whatever it was, whatever medium it was in, you know, video, traditional painting, whatever, every one had this placard next to it that would sort of describe the artist and familiarize yourself with each artist, as well as not tell you what this installation is about, but they would give you a frame of reference of what this artist, like their journey is. And that really helped me make a connection of like, oh, this person loves to talk about immigration. Oh, this person loves to talk about women's rights or the struggle. And they had a lot, because it's Arizona, they had a lot of artists that came from like Mexico. And it was fascinating just to see their hard journey to come here portrayed in their artwork. I'm talking like three paragraphs. The placard was like three paragraphs. And you didn't have to read it, and you could still get something out of it. But for me, I always have a disconnect with modern art when it's too abstract for me to try to wrap my head around it. And I think that placard helped me at least give me a historical contextualization of what this artist tries to do normally. Whether they're breaking that theme or not doesn't matter. At least I sort of knew their journey, and then I could look at it like, oh, that's why they do that. That's interesting. It was fascinating.
That's cool. I Yeah, you know, it's like that director's commentary stuff. I'm not big into reading the placards. I mean, I'll look to see maybe who did the painting or whatever, or the installation. But that's about it. Because I think that kind of demeans the purpose of the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, the point of going to see these exhibits, to me, I mean, it could be different for everybody else. But to me, the point is to experience whatever the artist is trying to convey. And, you know, there may be something that they were trying to say, and you might see it differently. But to me, like, that experience is more important than whatever the placard says. That's like when we used to go, when I lived in New York especially. Ooh, excuse me, I'm dying.
Oh, no. Drink some of that tea.
Yes, I am, actually. They used to do the cassette tape tours, you know what I mean? You remember those?
Sure. Oh, yeah, for sure.
They give you the cassette player, and you just, like, walk around, and it's, like, timed to the exhibit. So it's like, hey, you're at this painting, now go to this one. Mm-hmm. I never did those either.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also did – there were two other things that I did that sort of stuck out. One, I guess there's a traveling because my mom's fascinated with the Titanic, and there's a traveling Titanic exhibit that was going around, and it happened to be at the Phoenix Aquarium. So at first I was just like – because I've been to the aquarium. Julia Cruise director and me, we went the last time we were there. And it's a great, brand-new aquarium. It's beautiful. But I was just like, oh, no, what are they going to do with Titanic? Are you kidding me? And then when you go there, because I just thought it would be like three little rooms. You know, it's just like nothing there. Just nothing there. But sure enough, when I found out it was a traveling exhibit, then it's like, oh, okay, now this makes sense because this does travel around to, you know, various museums and you know, places to put this up. And that was interesting. And they did have the little, not cassette tape, but the little headphones that you could go around. And that was more, almost like an audio play. So they would teach you historical facts or try to put it into historical context. But they did it through almost like an audio play, which was really interesting. And there was two different versions. You could type – what you did was type in like a number into a keypad. And they had two different numbers, one for like the adult version and one for the child's version. And the person that was handing them out was like, you could listen to both. You could listen to one or the other. It depends on what frame of reference you want. And it was interesting going back and forth on that.
Oh, so you could stop it at any point.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yep. Or you could listen to both of the tracks, and they're sort of telling you the same information, but not that it was dumbed down for children, but they sort of explain things instead of like, oh, they went to the aft deck. You know, it's like, what child's going to know what that is? So they sort of explained it differently.
There was no discussion of penis in the children's track, is what you're saying.
Correct. Yes, yeah, there was no Leonardo DiCaprio on a block of ice.
Yes, there was no steamy car scene in the kids' version.
Yes.
Uh-huh, very good.
Not that the children can't type in the other number and hear that steamy car scene.
Yeah, so that was my next question. What prevents a child from doing that?
Phoenix is very progressive.
So I've heard.
But I will say nothing beats so far by the few trips I made to Phoenix. Nothing beats the Museum of Musical Instruments. That still is, for me, that's the top one. I'm upset that I didn't go this year because I've gone the last 2 years. And that is you can walk around, you can read the placards, you can see all the instruments. But I think I told you about this before. I'm not sure. If I did, I apologize. But you walk around with headset, and the headset is connected to their Wi-Fi. So whenever you get within, I don't know what type of range it is, maybe 3 feet, of a musical instrument, you'll start hearing
oh, that's
that
neat.
Instrument play. So it's really interesting when you get to especially a lot of the like African or Middle Eastern instruments, and you'll hear them play, and then you can stay there because there's usually six tracks that we'll be playing for, I don't know, a minute, minute and a half, just to give you a different selection of what that sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear it playing solo and then playing like a duet track and then an entire like band or ensemble track.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating to hear each instrument that way. And I know my mother and my stepfather, I know they were bored after about an hour. But honest to God, I went through every freaking room. I read everything. I listened to almost all of the tracks. It was completely just, it was so engrossing to hear all this because you could back up into a display and because you got within the 3-4 feet, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're hearing music and you're like, where's this coming from? Oh my God, that's weird.
I like it.
And you turn around and you see like, oh my God, that's what that sounds like. Wow, that's interesting.
Hmm. I no longer have musical instruments of my own. You know, I used to be a drum player back in the day.
Oh, Percussion?
Percussion, yes. I'm not like in the school band, but I was in like punk rock bands. And I played the drums. Mm. And I no longer have a drum set because they're very loud.
Yes.
And I thought about getting an electric set, but they don't play the same. I don't like it. But I do still have one musical instrument.
A bongo?
Close.
Ooh, okay.
Very close. I have a darbuka that a friend of mine bought me when he went to Israel. Man, that would have been 99 or 2000.
Wow.
He went to Israel. He was Jewish, so he went to Israel for the summer. And uh-huh. then he brought me back a darbuka from Israel, and I still have it.
What does it look like? What does the instrument look like?
It's kind of like a bongo. It's a goblet drum.
Okay. So a little bit like smaller width?
Yeah, you put it on your lap.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
You put it in your lap. And,
I was close then.
It's, you know, it's like it goes straight up and then it tapers out to the drum part.
Neat.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's made out of fiberglass. So like it looks traditional, but it's mm-hmm. not because it's fiberglass.
Yeah, it's not going to fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. It still plays great. I play it all the time.
Oh, very neat.
Mm-hmm.
A good thing to get your stress out.
Yeah, it is very relaxing, actually.
Yeah, I bet.
It's relaxing.
I will say I went to a comic book store while I was there because a listener of the show, Dewan, suggested it. So,
oh, you went to his shop.
Yes, his little honey hole.
Yeah.
There was plenty of good things, and I got to say it was nice to see a store that – the music wasn't too loud. It was pretty, like, well put together and clean, like, very orderly. And the staff sort of asked you a couple times, do you need help? And then just sort of got out of your way and figured if you needed anything, you'll search them out, which was great. I appreciate that in a comic book store. I don't need anyone hanging over me or like, hey, what do you read? Here, let me give you 5 suggestions. It's like, dude. I don't need any of your suggestions. I'm good.
That's cool, man. We went to a con this past weekend.
Oh, do tell.
And well, we can go back to it later because you're still telling me about your trip. But no, this goes to my question because I bought very little at this con.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm curious, while you were at this honey hole, did you find anything mm-hmm. that piqued your interest?
I saw a few things, but as you well know, I'm sort of on a little bit of a temporary budget. But I did see some things that turned my head a little bit. They had like some artist's edition that I was like, oh, those are nice.
Mm-hmm.
They had a few boxes of like not full runs, but like 10 issue runs of different titles that definitely piqued my interest.
Interesting.
I will be going back there probably every time I go to the Phoenix area to visit mom.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good one.
That's good, man. I'm glad you had a good trip.
Yeah, thanks. It was not fun to come back, set the wheels down, and in the very next morning wake up to snow. That wasn't the best.
Yeah, I bet.
What could you do?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, how was the NC Comic Con?
It was fine. It was fine.
Did you take the girls?
I took Reagan. Zoe okay. was at her mom's.
Did she dress up?
She did not dress up.
Oh, okay.
But she did wear this shirt for some new, like, YouTube channel that's like a cartoon, and apparently it's got like a really big cult following. So she got stopped by like vendors that were there, like, "Where'd you get your shirt?" And apparently, there was one booth that we swung by, and the girls stopped her because apparently they're huge fans of the show and wanted to know where she got the shirt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some good info.
Yep. So I was not planning on going. My wife said, my wife's like, "We're going to go to the con tomorrow." And I'm thinking to myself, "Wife, going to a con?"
Right.
And so I was like, "What con?" And she's like, "NC Comic Con. We're going to go tomorrow." I was like, "I got to work half a day." This was Saturday. But uh-huh. I'll take her on Sunday. She's like, "Well, she said that you don't want to go." And I don't remember this.
Oh.
Apparently this, I told her this like 8 months ago.
Oh.
And I was like, "No, I'll fucking take her." So we go. I mean, we had a good time. Don't get me wrong. But then I remembered the reason I said I didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And NC Comic Con is in Durham, North Carolina. So it's a 4-hour drive each way.
Mm.
So for a day trip, that's a little much. And it's not like a huge con, right? Like Durham's not a big city to begin with. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I mean, I would have thought that Durham was bigger than here, but apparently not. It's at the Durham Convention Center, and it feels like a hotel con, you know what I mean? Like real small. Oh. And don't get me wrong, like there were some good names on there. I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But it's just, it's small, and so like we literally did the entire floor twice by like 2:30.
Wow.
And this is including going to lunch.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And so, that also includes your late arrival?
We weren't that late. We got there like 10 after 11. They opened at 11.
Oh, I thought you had to work half day. Okay.
No, that was Saturday. We went on Sunday.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. So, which is fine. So we drive up and my GPS took me to the completely wrong spot.
Oh no.
Right. So like I get off the interstate and we're driving. And I was like, I don't remember this from last time. But, you know, we hadn't been there in, like, 4 years. I was like, I don't remember this. And then it's like we're going through, like, farm roads and stuff. And finally it's like, "You've arrived at your destination." And I'm like, "No, I haven't." So fortunately, I kept going down that road. And then it looked like a main road. I made a right, and that took us into downtown Durham. So I got to the convention center. But, like, my GPS was off by, 10 miles, I would say.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
How was the parking and the, like, craziness of traffic?
Well, so, my bad. I don't carry cash ever. So, we get in there, and there's a parking lot right across the street from the convention center. Mm. And it was $5. I was like, perfect. I pull in. They don't take cards.
Do they take Bitcoin? Because we know you have that on.
Cash only for big events. Normally, you can swipe your card because they have a card machine there. But for big events, can't do it. Cash only.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be just the opposite.
Yeah. So I had to drive around out of the thing and go try to find a damn place with an ATM machine. And then we came back and parked there and we went inside. But it was fine. Like I said, we got there, 10 after 11. So it's not like we missed anything. It was good. Don't get me wrong. It was good. They had some good guests. Ooh. Let me see. Well, Michael Cho was there. He's everywhere. Becky Cloonan was there. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor were there. Tommy Lee Edwards, Kevin Eastman, Mitch Gerrards, Gerard, whatever, however you pronounce his last name.
Sure.
Was there. Tinny Howard. Mahfood was there. James O'Barr was there.
Dang.
All he had was Prince, so I didn't get anything.
Was he sulking? Did you at least enjoy some of his sulking?
No, he seemed like he was in a good mood.
Who would have thought? Look at this. He must be working for him.
Yeah, he seemed like he was in a good mood. He was tabled next to Tommy Lee Edwards.
Oh, that's a good.
So yeah, I mean that's probably good, right? Because I mean Tommy Lee's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else. Oh, Venditti was there, of course. So I didn't buy anything from him because I got all his stuff. But I did, of course, get some buttons from his kid.
Nice.
He takes his kid to the booth, and his kid like makes custom buttons. So I had Venditti do a little signature on a button. He made it into a button, and then he was selling pictures of Venditti in a button. So I bought one of those because I thought it was funny.
That's great.
He's great. I love seeing him. I'm trying to think who else. I talked to Richard Case a little bit. Doom Patrol.
What?
Yeah.
Back the truck up. How is that not the lead story? Go on. Oh my god. I you've seen me be flummoxed for creators. Even right now I'm speechless. I barely can babble. Oh my god, I can't believe you met him.
Yep. So I met Richard Case. He was great. He was doing some commission work. But he was very attentive, so that was nice.
That's great.
And we talked Doom Patrol a little bit, and I read that fairly recently, the Grant Morrison stuff.
Hell yeah.
So that was nice. I didn't get anything from him either. Mostly darn what it. He had was prints.
Okay.
He did have some original art, but nothing from Doom Patrol. Let me rephrase. Nothing that I would have wanted from Doom Patrol.
Was it in your price range?
Yeah, it was. I was very surprised. It was very affordable.
Yeah, I was going to say, because he's definitely hopped around. There's gaps in his portfolio that obviously, I'm sure he's not charging a crazy amount.
No, not at all. I mean, there were pages from Doom Patrol for like $200-$300.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, but nothing really caught my eye, so I didn't get anything.
Gotcha.
I also, you might like this one, I talked to Mike Perkins.
Oh, yes.
He was fantastic.
He is fantastic.
He was fantastic.
I bought a few of his prints.
Have you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
oh,
he was great. He was also still doing commissions.
Nice.
I didn't get to talk to him till later in the day, like 3 o'clock maybe. I think he had like three more to go before the end of the con. So,
wow.
He was very busy.
Oh, I bet.
He had some great stuff in there, and also extremely affordable.
Ooh,
unfortunately, nice. 99% of what he had was stuff from Lois Lane, Lois Lane book.
That sounds great
which, let me tell you, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
but like nothing really caught my eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not Bucky, and it's not Union Jack.
Yeah,
those are the two I would think of. But if he gave me a little retro love, Lois Lane, that would be pretty nice.
I mean, like, I looked through, he had like three or four books. I looked through all of them. I thought like maybe I'll pick up some of his X-Men stuff. Like, there was one X-Men page in there, and I didn't even recognize who the character was. I was like, eh. but there were a couple pages from when he did The Stand, the Stephen King book.
Yep.
I mean, those were cool. But like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to buy a page, like, I want it to be something awesome.
Yeah, you want to connect with it a little bit. And the problem is, even the unknown X-Men character was way overpriced because guess what? It's an X-Men character.
No. That X-Men page was like $150.
Ooh, that isn't bad at all.
No. But like I said, didn't recognize the character. So I was like, eh, whatever. Right. There was something else he had in there that I was really tempted. But I ended up not getting it. I can't remember what it was.
Hmm.
Might have been on a page from Green Lanterns. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I had the same thing when I went to talk to Sean Crystal for a little bit. The problem with him, I love his cover work. And he had one of the covers he did for Archer and Armstrong in there for so cheap that I should have bought it. But like, I was just like, eh. Like, I didn't even like this issue that much, you know what I mean?
Right.
It all
goes back to making an impression on me, to be honest with you.
Yes. And that,
I mean, of course, price comes into it, but when everything is leveled at the same, like, sort of price ballpark. then I have to connect with it.
So it was kind of weird though, because, you know, he did a lot of work on Deadpool, Sean Crystal did. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so he wasn't at the table when I got there, but I'm flipping through the pages and he came over and started chatting with me. And I felt so bad. We chatted for like a few minutes or whatever. And then he's like, all the Deadpool stuff is half off.
Did you say because it's Deadpool?
And so I said, no offense, you're a fantastic artist. Your Deadpool pages are fantastic, but he's my least favorite character. And he just started laughing. He's like, well, you probably don't want to look at this book, but you want to look at this stuff. So I did. I flipped through it. And he also had a lot of original art, not in a book, just loose pages. And he was selling those for $50 a piece.
Wow.
But most of those were also Deadpool.
Ah, darn it.
So I was like, dude, I wanted to get something. It's all Deadpool. Can't do it.
Could you at least find me a Cable and Deadpool? Then maybe I would buy that for Cable.
But he was great, and he was, he didn't look at all like because I don't look up what people look like, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
I thought Sean Crystal, he'd be like a young hipster dude or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's probably like at least my age, maybe a little bit older.
Wow.
He does look a little hipsterish, but, he was cool, you know, whatever.
Nice.
Yeah, I had a good time. But again, yeah, Mike Perkins, fantastic.
Yeah.
If you ever see Mike Perkins at a con, just go chat with him for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. Yeah. He's got that accent too. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. You're a cool dude.
Oh yeah. Mr. UK.
Yeah, Mr. UK. but I wasn't expecting it because, you know, I didn't even look up the guest list.
That's always nice.
Yeah. So I just showed up. I'm like, oh, these people are here. Cool.
So how do you handle the con with your wife and daughter?
Well, so my wife, because I went, did not go.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Because yeah. I was really taken back that your wife's going to be there. But then I also thought, well, that's good. Because maybe now Martin can go to a panel or like, I'm going to break off and go down Artist Alley or look at pages for a couple hours.
Right, right.
I'll meet up with you guys in about 2 hours.
No, there were no like panels that I wanted to go to scheduled on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to worry about panels. And like I said, the con's pretty small, so I got through it pretty quickly. Nick, like I tried, man. I was like, I've got to buy something.
Yeah.
I did end up buying a few things. I bought a couple issues of Creepy and a couple issues of Eerie.
Where are those? Why haven't you taken pictures of those? You know,
I'm not really on social anymore. We'll talk about that later. I'm trying to extremely limit my social time.
You could still take those pictures and send them.
But they were like super cheap, dude. I was like, I was flipping through it because I was looking for some more Solar stuff. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get some more Gold Key Solar books.
Sure.
And I found one guy that had some, like the one booth that had yep. like a couple issues, and they were yep. all in garbage condition.
Right, but he still wanted a gold mine for?
No. They were inexpensive, but I was like, okay. Dude, like even at that price, like, nah, bro.
Yeah, come on.
Like I'm good with reader copies. These are like, let me wipe my ass in the toilet copies.
Sure.
I didn't say it like that, but you know.
How was the condition with the Creepy and Eerie?
Pretty good. So, matter of fact, there was an Eerie number 2 that I picked up.
Ooh.
And I looked at it, and like it was cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the guy, and I was like, is this the right price on this book? He said, yeah. I said, is this a reprint? He said, no, it's the original, first printing. All right, dang. I'll take all of these. so that's what I bought. And, dude, I spent, like, nothing on them.
Of course. Yeah, some people don't think that they're worth anything, which
I
is
mean,
crazy.
Maybe that's what it is.
The covers alone, my God, just to put them in a frame and put them up in,
yeah.
like, your room, that's worth the money right there.
Hell yeah. I've got some old Tales from the Crypt that I hung up just because the covers are cool as shit.
Heck yeah.
They're probably not worth much of anything, but anyway, you can always tell though, to go to your point, you can always tell like what the market is.
Mm-hmm.
at a specific spot based on like what is being sold, right? And I think a bigger con like C2E2, maybe you don't see that as much because you have people coming from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But a small con like this, like everyone's got like dozens of boxes of DC, dozens of boxes of Marvel.
Yep.
Right? Like full runs of like current shit. And then like up on the wall, you have like Amazing Spider-Man stuff and like some FF, some Avengers, like Venom, like Spawn, random shit like that. But like the stuff that I was interested in, I couldn't find anywhere, man.
Huh.
There was one booth that he had awesome stuff. Matter of fact, I tweeted at Jay because he had like almost an entire run of Love and Rockets.
Ooh.
In a box. The original, the oversized ones,
and yeah.
In the second series. So I messaged okay. Jay, and I think Jay's already got them all, so he didn't need them. But like this guy, he had at least a dozen, he had a big ass booth, at least a dozen boxes of like old indie comics, like Ashcan style comics.
Mm.
From, you know, like early 80s and shit like that.
Nice.
He had what was the one? Damn it, now I can't remember. I almost said the Goon, but I know that's not it. The Creep.
Hmm.
I don't know if you remember that. I'm sure somebody listening to this remembers Creep. He had like a bunch of Creep stuff in there. I'm like, holy shit, like I haven't seen this stuff in like 30 years. And they were in great condition. And just like the randomest stuff that he had in there was amazing. I didn't buy any of it. Because I wasn't that into it, but it was just cool to flip through it and go through it. He even had like old magazines. I saw one guy had a Wizard number one CGC 9.8 up on the wall.
Oh my lord!
Wow. Which I thought about buying. I can't remember how much it was, but I thought about buying it just to have it.
Wow, crazy!
With the
Creep, are you talking the Dark Horse comic?
No. This is a magazine.
Gotcha.
Well,
gotcha.
Not a magazine, but it was like an old school indie comic.
Ah.
I'm sure if Jay or Dennis are listening, they'll know what the hell I'm talking about.
Definitely.
But yeah, he had a bunch of that kind of stuff, man. I was like, holy shit, like, neat. I've been through a lot of cons and I have never seen this much of this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, every once in a while you'll find a vendor that will have like Epic magazines and stuff mm-hmm. like that from
oh,
like
yeah,
the
this
80s.
Guy had Epics and was a not Comic Shop News, whatever that comic. Ah, god damn it! I bet the one that Mike was getting.
Oh yeah, the alternative to
yes.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of those.
Interesting.
It was cool. Oh, he had. Oh my god. I wanted to get one, but they were way too expensive, and I know that there would just be some bullshit inside. He had Batmania fanzines in there.
Ooh.
Like, in basically pristine condition.
Dang.
But they were pricey? Like, yeah, like $300-$400 a pop.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude, it's a fanzine. Like, I'm not spending $400 on a fanzine.
Yeah, it would be one thing if you spent that price and the level of writing in the articles were at like a comics journal level.
Yeah.
Then you know it's like, ooh, this is going to be some deep, long, like this will take me a long time to read.
Yep. But I mean, they were cool, dude. Like,
sure.
Maybe at some point, if I find like the right cover, I'll buy one.
Sure.
Just to put it up on the wall.
Yeah.
Because they're cool. It's just like, it's a black and white, quote unquote, magazine. I mean, it's like, You take a sheet of paper, you fold it in half, and you staple them together, right? Like somebody did it in their garage. But like the covers are cool because they're all like kind of reprints of like Batman comics from the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they say Batmania on them, whatever. Like whatever, it's cool, right? It's like a piece of bat history.
Mm-hmm.
But not for that much, man. Like if you wanted, like say $100 for it, then maybe I would have got one.
Sure.
But not for that much.
Well, for the right,
I was happy with what I got, so whatever.
The right cover, at least then you know you can hang it up afterwards after you read it and just see where the level of writing is.
Yeah. Well, and the few that he had all had Infantino covers.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they were nice.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah. Meh. Old Batmania. I do want to read one at some point. I wonder if anyone's got PDFs online. I'm sure they do.
I'm sure there are.
But yeah, it was good. And then I didn't see Venditti until the end. He was tabled next to Mitch. And he didn't have a banner, right? So when I walked the floor the first time, I saw Mitch's banner. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll go see Mitch later. And so I kept going. And then we're doing our final round, and I'm walking up the aisle, and I hear, Martin! And I look over, he's waving at me, so I go over there and talk to him. He was great, as always.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, not much, man. Valiant had a booth there.
Oh, really? A full booth?
Mm-hmm.
Not partnering with another vendor?
No, a full-size booth.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
Yeah, they always have their booth as soon as you walk in, the main entrance on the left.
Okay, yep. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good, good, good. And how did your daughter enjoy it? Did she get anything?
Did not buy anything.
Did she get a gigantic pretzel? Did she get a huge slice of pizza? A gigantic drink?
Let me tell you, what did she get? We got pizza that even Aaron Bell would be proud of.
Oh.
North Carolina does pizza,
huh?
Yes.
All right.
Because they're owned by, like, real Italian guys from Naples.
Ah.
What was the place called? Pomieri, I think it is. Let me see if I can look it up. Pomieri Pizza. I bet that's it.
Oh.
Yes, that's it. Pompieri Pizza.
Ah.
102 City Hall Plaza in Durham, North Carolina. Not a sponsor. But fantastic pizza.
That's great.
Yeah. It's, and you know, they like hand toss it when you order it. So like you're going to be waiting 15, 20 minutes. But it's great. It's great. It's like real, like Italian from Italy pizza, like real thin crust with the olive oil on top and everything.
Nice.
It's great. It's really good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
But did she have a good time?
Yeah. She had a great time.
Good.
She had a great time. So we'll see. We'll see if she wants to go again. So the reason
that you said no 8 months ago, which is crazy that a child wouldn't revisit that topic unless she just thought you were so adamant with your no that like, uh-oh, better not ask again. What was the reasoning? Just because you thought it was going to be small and a long-ass drive?
Yeah, it's just... You know, when I go to a con, I want a particular experience. And I just, aside from the fact that you get to talk to like, cool creators, which I did, mm-hmm. In terms of like finding stuff that I want, I know it's not going to be there.
Yeah, that's what makes it more of a hotel feel.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I felt bad for one guy because I'm looking for a couple of specific things at this con. Mm-hmm. And nobody's got them. And so I go to this guy's booth and he's looking and he's talking to these other guys. And they're looking for, I don't remember what it was they were looking for, but it was fairly recent.
Sure.
And he's like, oh yeah, and we have like these boxes here or whatever it was, like 3 for $5, and these are like $1 or whatever. And so I'm looking, I look up on the wall, I don't see anything, so I started walking off, and he's like, is there anything that you need help with? And I was like, well, one, thanks for asking, because that's my favorite thing at a con, is when they're asking me if I want something. I was like, not really. I was like, I looked over your booth, you don't really have what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, what are you looking for? And so I told him like old Gold Key stuff, you know, like old horror magazines, things like that. And he's like, I don't have any Gold Key stuff. He's like, you can look in the dollar bins. I was like, yeah, they're not going to be in the dollar bins. Oh, no, he said, they might be in the 3 for $5 bins. And I was like, no, they're not going to be in the 3 for $5 bins. He's like, well, I've got all these dollar boxes if you want to look at it. I was like, thanks for trying, bro, but you're not going to have anything I want in a dollar box. You know what I mean? I was like, so, I want something a little pricier, and you just don't have it. So
he hopes that you jump in there, and all of a sudden you discover, like, 80s or 90s Silver Surfer issues.
Sure,
that you
maybe.
Totally forgot about.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, look, here's that issue of Quasar that I didn't pick up. It's like, dude, I already know what I want. Like,
you know,
come on.
If you have said that
find
to me,
famous, I'm not going to find Famous Monster Magazine 3 for $5. I know I'm not.
If you had said to me, if you were at this con with me on Sunday and I walked away and he told me that and you would have said, but he might have some Quasar in there, I might have been like, yeah, well, fuck, yeah, I want that now.
No, I would have looked back at him and been like, you got any Quasar in there? And he damn well better be like, they're in this box. Because I ain't going to go through your 10 boxes, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Takes me a lot to jump down there. Unless I have absolutely all the time in the world. Which, guess what? You're with your daughter. You don't have all the time in the world. And even when you're at C2E2, do you have all the time in the world? No, you'd rather like to hang out with your dudes and like, instead of flipping through and doing stuff like that.
Sure, come on. Unless you find like this cool art booth and you spend half a day there.
Dude, original art. The original pages are completely different.
Dude, I was looking too and nobody had any.
That's so weird. There's
not
always
a single
one.
Booth.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing with the hotel cons or small cons like that. You can find stuff that like people either one just want to unload so they go to a smaller con because the tables aren't that expensive, or they just don't know what they have. Like the magazines or original art.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I was hoping I could find some original art, but there was just nothing that I really wanted. Like I said, I think just the maybe that's what sells there, right? Just Marvel and DC, nothing else.
Yeah.
And that's not stuff that I was looking for.
Well, comics started in the 80s, so I don't know if you know that. But I get from a dealer's perspective, why am I bringing stuff that costs $800, $1,000 when this really isn't the market for that?
Sure, sure.
And God forbid you lose it. God forbid it walks away from your booth, because even if I didn't want to own that $1,000 issue up there, if I look up and see it's $1,000, guess what? I could steal that. Mm. And then I could get $1,000 for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure the risk reward's pretty, pretty bad at those type of cons.
I mean, surely the tables aren't that expensive, right? But you still want to recoup your money. So, I mean, I get why they had the books they had.
Sure.
It was just not the best experience for me because I didn't want any of those books.
Right. Yeah, for sure. You're a different audience, a different level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it sounds like your daughter had a great time though.
Yeah, she had a fun time. She also didn't find anything.
That sucks.
But whatever.
Did they have some kids stuff? Because usually Sundays are like more family day.
No, not really. No.
Dang, that stinks.
Yeah, I didn't see Neil Adams. That was weird.
Oh, that's real shame. Darn it.
But Kevin Eastman had a giant booth in a long line, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, he sure did.
Oh, I bet.
You know, now that I think about it, I think Neil Adams was right next to Kevin Eastman. Well, shit, he was there. Oh, man.
I will tell you,
he's great.
I forgot to mention this about my Phoenix trip. After going to the honey hole and not finding anything, I told my mom, hey, let's go to Half Price Books. Because, you know, she's an avid reader, not of comics, but of regular books. So that was right on the way home. So we swung in there. And like I said, I didn't have any extra money. And the whole point of the trip was to go get away. And I pretty much told Julie, the cruise director, I'm not going to put anything on the cart. I just can't buy anything. You know, this trip is way more than my birthday, Christmas combined. So this was a very selfless present.
Right.
And the last thing I need is Catholic guilt of like, oh, boy, I put $100 because I went to this comic book store. You know, I couldn't justify it.
Sure.
I mean, not to say that I had walking around money. I had $30. But while in Half Price Books, there was something that was in the regular spot that obviously should have been in the clearance spot. Because, you know, with Half Price Books, they always put that obnoxious sticker price tag on it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the clearance books, you'll see the price tag and then they do a second one right over it. But right. Not perfectly over it, so you know, oh, this must have been on clearance.
Sure.
And sure enough, I found a book on clearance, so I picked it up, and then it was like on sale on top of that, so I got this book for $7.99, and it's the hardback version of Judge Dredd, the Complete Brian Boland edition.
Nice.
Which is that really like thick white spine version. They have umpteen of these type of books, like the Complete Mike McMahon and Carlos. And just to get this one, and I literally looked at it, and I was like, what? I was just like, this can't be $10.99. And then I looked up, and there's a sign that's like, oh, and take another 30% off. And I was like, what?
Dang.
So I was just like, yeah, this has to come home with me. This has to come home.
Yeah, that reminds me. I was flipping through, you know, they always have those boxes of trades.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever,
like the buy two get one free.
Yeah, so whatever it is.
Yeah.
I got an Infinite Crisis, like, I don't know if it's a compendium or omnibus or whatever.
Oh, hell yeah.
For $5.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was flipping through and I was like, what is this giant book? And I looked at it and I was like, oh shit. Yep. Gotta get that.
and I'll something like that, especially at a con. Don't you sort of look at it and then you're like, there's no way this is $5. And I know when I go up to buy this, this person will be like, oh, I'm sorry, that was mismarked. And it's like, no, just because you didn't put the zero and make it 50 doesn't mean that it isn't $5.
No, I just stopped flipping and I was like, hey, I'm going to get this one. He's like, $5. I was like, all right. Yeah, that thing was giant, man. It was like 20 pounds.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Well, that's good, man. Judge Dredd. God, there. I think there's a new collection coming out.
Nice.
I just heard about that a couple weeks ago.
I need to jump into those IDW.
Oh, you need to.
Dredd, for sure.
Yeah, they're really good. They're really good. I wish they'd make another movie. That Keith Urban movie was fantastic.
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. Who's Keith Urban? Oh, Keith Urban's the country singer. yeah, he can get in there too. Whatever.
Sure. As long as he's wearing his tight blue jeans.
Yeah,
of course.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
You just need to say, I am the law. I've been reading a real book.
I'm with you with the Carl Urban. Like,
right?
That is completely underrated.
Dude, that movie's so good. I don't care what anybody says. He's tried to get him to make a sequel, and I don't know if it's a rights issues or what it is, but they're not interested in a sequel.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
And every time I'm watching an episode of The Boys, I'm just like, how is he not doing Judge Dredd? Mm-hmm. He's still so freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Damn, I'm going to have to watch that tonight.
And I got news for you. If they ever pulled the Ridley Scott 20 different director cut versions, dude, sign me up. If all of a sudden they came out with like, oh yeah, this is the 3.5 hour. Oh, don't watch this. It is so bloated with garbage. I'd be like, oh no, that isn't garbage. Sign me up for that. Oh my God. I live in that world.
Speaking of garbage.
Yeah.
And related to Judge Dredd.
Sure.
I watched the latest Predator movie.
Oh, is that bad?
It's terrible.
Really?
It's awful.
Even with, what's his name? Keegan?
Whatever, it was terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. The music was terrible, the special effects were terrible.
No. The music was fine.
Was it more the bad acting, there was no suspense, and the story was god-awful?
The music was good.
Okay.
The special effects were good.
I figured.
The story could have been good, but then they killed it. Like 30 minutes in.
Oh, man.
The acting wasn't bad. Just like it wasn't a Predator movie. You know what I mean? Like Predator movie, that what makes the good Predator movies good is the suspense, right? It's like a horror, like an old school horror flick.
For sure.
An alien.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like you don't see the alien, you just see like his hand. Or like you see him grab a dude by the head.
Or you hear him.
Whatever, you know, or like
or you see the three lasers come across his face,
or you see the infrared visor like looking at people,
yeah,
right, like that makes it cool.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some of that here,
yeah,
but no, like there's a kid in the movie, like you can't put a kid in a Predator movie.
Hey, they did an Alien. What was it, Alien 3?
Oh, I guess you're right.
Or Aliens.
Aliens. Yeah.
And which, that was still good.
Which, by the way,
Yes.
Just as a side, there's Comic Talk Legion today.
Ooh.
If you're a fan of Aliens or the, the Alien franchise, who is putting it out? I think Dark Horse has the rights, right? To put the books out?
I believe so.
There is a – it's not a remake, but basically they took an unproduced script for Alien 3 and they turned it into a comic.
So it's not based on the movie. It's based on one of the original scripts before they came up with the Alien 3 script.
Correct. So when they were going to make Alien 3, they hired Neal Stephenson to write it.
Ooh, hell, ring the bell. Are you fucking kidding? So here comes the first F. Are you fucking kidding me? Neal Stephenson?
Yeah.
Wow.
They
hired
Neal Stephenson to write it, and they decided not to go with that script.
Are they effing high? Who are these people?
So they made the kind of awful Alien 3. All right, let me rephrase that. It wasn't kind of awful. Like, it was fine.
But you know who directed that?
Who did
that? That was our Dark City dude.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
I believe so. It was either that or Fincher. It still had a good director attached to it.
Yeah, but he didn't have anything to do with the story, so that explains why the story wasn't, like, the greatest. The movie was fine, though.
But does that mean that director poo-pooed a Neal Stephenson script, is my question.
No, I think it was a studio thing. I think it was before the director got involved.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, anyway, so they've been putting out, I think it's finishing up, or just finished up, the version of Neal Stephenson's script.
That was the Fincher film, I just looked it up.
Okay. Well, I mean, whatever. The film was fine. It was fine. The story wasn't great, but it was fine.
It wasn't Neal Stephenson's script.
I mean, it was better than Aliens 4.
Oh, man.
But Neal Stephenson's script is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And it continues directly after Aliens. So you learn about Ripley and the little girl, which you see nothing of in Alien 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of the franchise with Aliens 2. So, anyways, highly recommended.
Sheesh. Wow. And that's out now.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to spend some money. Now you have me spending money. I need to see how Neal Stephenson attacked an alien script from the ground up. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, he actually made it in the franchise, unlike Alien 3. Hmm.
Wow, that's great. Okay, I really might have to check that one out.
It's good. Yeah, matter of fact, I recommend all the Aliens books. Who was doing the other one? Hang on. Because he was doing it, and I was like, oh.
Huh.
Really? This guy's doing it? Let's see here. I'll tell you right now. No Exit? Is that it? Nope, that's not it. Brian Wood. He's doing the Aliens books.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're really good.
The controversial Brian Woods.
Yeah, whatever. They're really good.
Yeah, of course. He's a good writer.
He is. Highly recommend the Brian Wood stuff.
Dang, but still, wow. Oh, and can I throw out, I did purchase two, and I'm full of segues here.
Uh-huh.
And this will segue nicely into your next topic.
Oh?
While I was out, my mother and I did a little, as I said before, she's a avid reader, so she wanted to pick up a couple books, and we swung by a place before going into the Modern Art Museum.
I gotta correct myself.
Sure.
Gabriel Hardman's doing the Aliens books now.
Wow!
Yeah. Okay, continue.
Oh, I like him. Like him a lot.
He's great.
He sure is. So we found a bookstore that was a locally owned independent bookstore, which, of course, tickles my fancy. But I like to support local. What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
But I did find a couple actual prose books.
Oh.
And they are the hard case crime books. And I found two Charles Williford books.
Wow.
Both of them are just pulpy goodness. Oh my gosh. It's so hard to pick up comics, even though I read a crap ton of comics in the last, how long has we haven't, in the month that we haven't recorded. Oh my God. I have read, my friend. But I think I'm ready to take a little bit of a break, a little prose break. I need some pulp fiction in my life. So a couple Charles Williford books. Very that nice. Were the great thing about those hard case crime books, no matter how, the thickness, they're the softbacks are always $9.99. So it just feels like, wow, I'm not spending $20 for a hardback book. Because I love me some Neal Stephenson, but guess what? His hardback or his softbacks, Mama Lucian. You're paying an arm and a leg for. They're pricey. So do tell. You said you're reading an actual book.
I'm reading actual book.
Yeah.
I am reading Carl Jung's The Red Book.
Wow.
It is fascinating.
Wow. When did that come out?
Let's see. I don't know. The version that I'm reading came out in 2009. I think. So here's the weird thing about this book. All right, let me explain what it is.
Sure.
So for people not familiar with Carl Jung, you probably never went to school, I guess. I don't know. He's one of the guys that basically co-created modern psychology.
I was going to say, or you never took a psychology class.
Well, yes, sure. I mean, surely you've heard the name Jung at some point, right? Like without having taken a psychology class.
You would hope so, but also don't forget a lot of people in high school, there wasn't a lot of psychology classes being offered. And then if you're a business or an accounting major, when are you ever going to be approached to do psychiatry?
That's true. Yeah. All right, I'll give you that. All right, I take my statement back.
They might have heard of him, but not actually know anything about his philosophy.
Yes. So he basically helped shape modern psychology and psychiatry, along with Freud, who I'm sure like everybody's heard of. Mm-hmm. All right. So the Red Book is basically like how he came up with all his theories. Mm. And when I start describing this book, you're going to be like, yep, that's totally up your alley. So it makes total sense. So he started writing the Red Book in 1913. Okay. So he started having these experiences from 13 to 17, so over 4 years, where, I mean, basically, like, he was hallucinating all the time. And so he developed a lot of his ideas of, like, psychology and how the mind works based on these hallucinations that he was having. And for that reason, this book was not published for decades.
Mm.
Because, you know, psychologists didn't want people to be like, wait, you guys are making all this stuff up of this dude that, like, hallucinated 24/7 for 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it was hush-hush. Like, very few people had read this book until, like, the 80s.
Wow.
And the reason that I decided to read this is I went down this weird YouTube rabbit hole, and somehow ended up finding this video about The Shining, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I'm not a fan of Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like The Shining because I love Stanley Kubrick. And they started talking about one of the scenes in The Shining where there's this red book on the hotel manager's desk,
mm-hmm.
which I had never noticed before. And sure enough, like on the side, it says the Red Book. And like, you can't miss it in the scene. So I don't know how I missed it because I've seen this movie like 3 or 4 times. It's like the fourth character in the scene. And, so it's like, So they started talking about Carl Jung's The Red Book. And I was like, I need to read this. And it's fascinating. So it's how he came up with like, the character archetypes, right? Like the hero, the old man, the great mother, like all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Archetypal events like the flood, creation, the apocalypse, stuff like that. All stuff that like you develop in your subconscious and like you people create symbols and art and things like that based on these archetypes. And they're all based on these hallucinations that he had for 4 years. I think the first time the book was published was like 1930 maybe. But anyways, like nobody had read this for decades, and somehow like Stanley Kubrick had gotten a copy of it. And so a lot of the stuff in The Shining came from the Red Book, and a lot of the stuff that he discussed in Full Metal Jacket was also from the Red Book. So I've been reading it, and it is fascinating.
Wow.
Like, it reads, it's not quite as good, but I don't know if you've ever read any Lovecraft. And I really like Lovecraft, and I think what Lovecraft does really well is, like, describing the environments that his characters are in. And so there's a lot of that here, right? Like, he's walking through these, like, magical landscapes and, like, meeting these weird creatures, and, like, talking to them. And he's got, like, this old man archetype, that kind of, like, is his guru and, like, guides him through this landscape. And, like, even as he's writing his theories and developing them, this, like, guru, his voice, like, talks to him in his head. And he's like, oh, you know why you did that? Because of this. Like, maybe you should do it this way. It's really interesting. And it's a journal. And so, there's a lot of his handwriting. You see like different writing styles, but there's also pictures, which is what's cool. So you see like pictures of the characters and the landscapes he's describing, or like certain symbols that he sees, like floating in space or whatever. It's really good. It's very good. It's long. It's 400 pages. But it is fascinating. Really fantastic.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. It's really good. So, it's kind of worked out because, you know, it's NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it's helped me develop a couple things that I was unsure of on the thing that I'm working on.
Did you ever read, because the way you're describing it sounds sort of trippy, like Carlos Castaneda?
Yeah.
Have you ever read any of his work?
Yeah, we did in junior year of college, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, I was reading it in high school, and it definitely has that Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Illusions. It has that sort of trippy, free, quote-unquote free quality to it, which I think is fascinating. I have no problem you jumping into an alternate frame of mind to approach a situation and to write about it. I think that's fascinating.
Well, so what's cool is, you know, I'm into this whole meditation thing or whatever. But it's I'm always looking for, like, new ways to experiment in my head.
Yeah,
and so I've been experimenting with hypnagogia.
Ooh,
and
what's that?
That's been fascinating too. So it's like the third mental state. So you have your conscious, right? When you're awake,
mm-hmm.
when you're asleep, you're unconscious. Hypnagogia is like the in between phase.
Oh, is that the phase where you're sort of slipping out, like it feels like you're falling type of
thing? Yes.
Oh, fascinating.
But there's a way where consciously you can be unconscious.
Is that the, like, the feeling that people are, like, drowning?
Well, it's like you're dreaming, except you're conscious that you're dreaming. So you can kind of guide the dream and consciously take from those experiences that you have in your dreams, but you can actually remember them and internalize them because you're partially conscious. Whereas in your dream, you're not conscious.
I think Billie Eilish has that issue.
Really? She's got a lot of issues. She's got the other thing.
Where you can taste colors.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Photosthesia?
Synesthesia.
Synesthesia. There you go. Yeah, my bad. Mm-hmm. I should know my Latin better.
Was it you that showed me that video? I watched a video about her in synesthesia.
It was me.
Oh, good. See? I do pay attention.
I know, and I appreciate it.
So this technique's very simple. So what I do is I take a plastic cup, and I hold it in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, lay down on my back with my arm extended out over the bed. And I have a plate on the floor. And so as I'm falling asleep, I let go of the cup, right? Because I'm asleep. I'm falling asleep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your body relaxes and the cup falls and I hear the cup, bing, And that wakes me up.
Mm.
And you do this like 3 or 4 times. And that puts you in this state of like, you're asleep, but your mind's not really asleep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That it sounds very Kubrick-ish.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. That reminds me, and I hate to say it, God, what's it? Oh, Christopher Nolan. Mm. He does similar stuff like that, but he does it too mainstream.
Mm.
He doesn't push it far enough, but you can tell he's thinking about things like this. But Kubrick was definitely doing shit like this.
Well, like, Nolan does a lot of that in, like, Inception, right?
Yes, yes.
But some of the other stuff, not so much.
But he always does that trans, am I awake, am I sleeping, is this a dream, is this reality, am I mixing both together?
Yep.
He does that a lot in a lot of his films.
Yeah, so Interstellar is one of my favorites, and he does that. I mean, that's basically one of the plot devices, right?
For sure.
That's how they save the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Inception, like, that's the entire plot.
Yep, yep. But you even see that in, even his Batman films. Like, there's a trippy, transy quality to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the one that's the least noticeable in is The Prestige, which I love. Like, that's one of my favorite movies.
Same here.
You know what? I wonder. That's the one with what's his name, right? Billy Idol, isn't that isn't he in Prestige? He plays
is
Tesla.
He? Billy Idol?
Oh no, never mind. I'm thinking of the other one. At the same time that The Prestige came out, there was another magic movie.
Yes. I like that one too.
Yes, with Ed Norton.
Right.
And Jessica Biel and Billy Idol. He was Tesla.
Was he?
Yes.
God, I vaguely remember. Wow, I don't even remember him being in it.
Wasn't it Billy Idol?
I remember Edward Norton.
What was the name of that movie? All right, let's find this out. I bet it's just called, like, The Magician. Magic movie with Edward Norton. All right, let's find this out. The Illusionist.
There you go.
Yeah, The Illusionist.
But who was in it? Was it Billy Idol?
Wolverine was in it.
Okay,
right?
Hugh Jackman, sure, yeah.
Let's see, Ed Norton, Paul Giamatti, Jessica Biel, Rufus Sewell, Eddie Marson, Jake Wood, Tom Fisher. No, it was The Prestige. Let's go back to The Prestige. who, I'm telling you, Billy Idol, right? Wasn't it Billy Idol?
You could be right. I'm not disagreeing.
I'm probably totally wrong. Hang on, let's find out. All right, here we go. The Prestige, Hugh Jackman, Christian Bale, Michael Caine, Piper Perabo, Rebecca Hall, Scarlett Johansson, David Bowie. That's who it is.
There you go. Big difference.
David Bowie. Billy Idol. God. White spots.
But that was a fun road to go down.
Andy Serkis? I don't remember Andy Serkis in that movie. Anyways, yeah, good stuff. I saw a teaser for Nolan's new movie, Tenet.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
There's no trailer, but there is a teaser for it.
Weird.
I don't even know what the movie's about, but I want to see it. And it's got Batman in it. Robert Pattinson.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he's the lead.
He makes some interesting choices.
He makes some good movies.
Definitely.
There's a couple. What's the one on Prime right now? I think it's called Life. No, it's not called Life. Maybe it is called Life. It's on Amazon Prime. And I recommend it. It's very weird. He likes to make weird movies.
How well would you recommend it? How is it?
High Life. That's what it's called. Yeah. It's in a space station. And I don't want to get into it because I'm going to spoil the plot. But it's in a space station.
But it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll put it in my queue then.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoyed that one. And the one where he's got his what's the correct PC term? Mentally handicapped brother, that one's really good too.
What's eating Gilbert Grape?
No. God, dude, you asked me to name stuff. I don't know. You should know better than
I
that.
I don't know.
Yes. Oh, The Lighthouse, that's the other one. I think that one's on Prime as well. That one's really good.
Okay.
It's black and white.
I did see the trailer for that.
Yeah,
that did look good.
Him and William Dafoe.
Yeah, that's out in movie theaters. I think they're trying to get Oscar buzz.
Oh, is it? So is it a Prime Amazon Studios?
It must be.
I swear that's on Prime.
I don't doubt it at all, because that's what Prime does.
Yeah, it's got really good ratings.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's so weird. There's like three or four movies right now about dudes at lighthouses.
A lot of symbolism.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah. But I might have to see that, because Robert Pattinson looks pretty kick-ass for that lighthouse film.
Yeah. It's good. Recommend it.
Okay, good.
I recommend it. I also recommend The Red Book. If nice. if you want some different reading. I love, it's almost like magical realism stuff, right? I always talk about my love for Pynchon. He's not really a magical realist, but he's my favorite writer. And then my second favorite is Borges, who is definitely a magical realist.
Hmm.
Have you ever read any Borges?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. You should listen to an upcoming episode of the Bibliophile Adventures, in which I'll talk about Borges's, a couple things.
I will happily listen to that. Thank you.
Yep.
But
I'm gonna do one on the Aleph.
Okay. I will give it a listen.
I can't believe that. Dude, you should, you want good reading. You should pick that up. And they're all short stories.
Okay.
They're
fascinating. Yeah, even better. I like that.
He's got one about, basically an infinite library. It's a book that contains all books ever written.
Whoa. That sounds like Nirvana. I would love that. I told you I always had a premonition that the day I'm going to keel over dead is the day that I actually read all of my comics and books.
Mm.
That would be the ideal way for me to pass away.
Interesting. What if when you pass away...
A library having everything would be fascinating.
What if when you pass away, in your next life, you just read only the stuff you hated reading in your previous life?
Oh, that would be the worst. Because I read some real clunkers, dude.
There's a lot of clunkers.
It might be good to revisit some. You might be able to find a few that are like, no, I was wrong.
Well, so think about this. So what
I would
if,
say the majority, those clunkers are not going to turn themselves around.
All right, so what if in your next life you relive it like normal, except you only read and watch shit that you hated in your previous life? And the point is for you to gain new experiences so you find a way to enjoy those things you hated.
Wow.
What about that?
That doesn't sound like a good use of my valuable free time.
Well, I mean, it's another life. It's a brand new life.
Right, but then I have to revisit everything I've already read. My point is I don't like to revisit anything twice because there's always 100 other things that I could be watching or reading.
Yeah, but it's a new life, so you don't remember what you read in your previous life. It's just the joke the universe plays on you.
Well, that's a terrible joke because everything that I would read or everything that I would watch, I would actually, to be honest with you, if that happened, I would probably just think, wow, comic books aren't for me. Wow, reading isn't for me, or television isn't for me. And I would hunker down and all of a sudden become like way into music or way into poetry or something that I've never jumped into all that much. You know
Precisely.
What I'm saying?
Exactly.
Or all of a sudden I would learn like 20 languages because you know what's not for me? Reading. You know what's not for me? Movies, TV, because it all sucks. And I'm sure people would be like, what are you talking about? This, and are good. No, it's just not for me. No big deal.
Exactly.
Like,
see,
I would find
it.
Other passions. Yes.
You got
I took your conundrum scenario and spun it into gold for
see?
Myself.
It's not so bad.
No.
Then you find all kinds of new interesting things to like.
But I would hate not reading comics. Come on, buddy.
Well, but you don't know that, because in that life, you read comics and hated them.
That's true.
And you don't remember your previous life.
And you're not telling me to give up all of my passions, which I can survive on that.
No, and I'm sure that you would have some similar interests.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Just imagine how full bore I would go into food. Think of it that way.
Ooh, and then at some point, you're like, wait, I used to like comics. And TV and movies. And I also like art and this and that. Now I know everything.
Or I would be like, I bet you I'm going to give comics another go. And then I pick up a Deadpool comic and I'm like, oh, still not for me. And then everybody's like, no, you should try Batman or a Spider-Man comic. Nah, just not for me. But thanks, I appreciate it. No, the art's good looking. Okay, Elsa, the art looks nice, but mm-hmm. it just isn't for me. You just enjoy that.
So breaking news.
Oh, I was going to tell you what I watched.
Oh, but that's tell me. Okay. No, that's a good segue. Go ahead. No, that's an even better segue. Tell me what you watched.
This item that I wanted to bring up to you, and I hope you watched it, but I doubt you watched it, because it's free on Amazon Prime, and it is called Chris Claremont's X-Men.
I did watch it.
Oh, very good. Now you're listening to me just like I listen to you. Look at this.
Uh-huh.
I thought as a talking head documentary, it gave me a lot more history to him ending up having the fiefdom of Marvel mutants
mm-hmm.
and happening to give up some of that control and letting go of that universe because he just couldn't keep the quality, could not write. There was not enough minutes and hours in the day. So guess what? And it was neat to hear Jim Shooter's perspective. I did enjoy that. But to have everyone looking back at how things worked
mm-hmm.
and who was it? Anna Sente?
Yep.
To have her talking about that and have Louise Simonson talking about editing his books. That was probably the best part of mm-hmm. the entire thing. I don't care what current writers and artists are like, that X-Men influenced me and it was Chris Claremont. I don't really, that just goes right out my ear. But to hear people that are in the trenches and like, then Shooter came to us and wanted four more books and I thought I could write them, but after a while I had to relinquish the reins. And to hear how he just sort of got pushed out, that was fascinating mm-hmm. and it was shocking that they didn't go more into that, considering they were talking to the other party that sort of forced him out.
Yep.
Didn't that feel like a blind spot? Like, you're talking to Liefeld. He did this. How could you not, like, how, as the director, how could you not be asking five more questions when Liefeld's just like, yeah, and then he just sort of left. He wanted me to draw this way and I didn't see it that way, so I would just present these pages and just have Chris write around whatever the pages looked like.
So I wonder about that exact thing with like every comic book documentary. The only exception being what was the Hulu one that was really good about Batman?
The Bob Kane one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob and
No Bob. Hey, God dang. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The Bill Finger documentary.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I think they all have that like slight level of fakeness to them, mm-hmm. right? Like, hey, we'll agree to talk to you about this documentary, but like, we're not going to talk about that. Mm. Don't you get that feeling? Like, it feels like there's a lot of that.
It feels like the person's maybe they're concerned with six other things, so they're not really an actual interview. That the problem with, and let's just put it on Front Street: Chris Claremont's X-Men. That's free for any Prime person.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an A-tier award-winning documentary.
The cover art is terrible.
It is terrible. But is it a good like historical artifact?
Yes.
But my point is that director who obviously knows the subject matter, why would they do a documentary on it if they weren't at all interested in it? But is he or she an interviewer? They might be a great director or editor, but maybe there's a skill to interviewing.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, where's the follow-up questions? Like, obviously when Chris Claremont's talking about this, you can tell he gets a little bit more animated, and this was how many decades ago?
Sure.
And he still got a little animated, and just to let Shooter or let Liefeld just sort of, well, that's the way it is. Like, I get it if all of a sudden, like, if it came out that, like, you know what, Liefeld's not going to go in the dirt with this. He's going to quickly answer it and move on. So that's what we're doing. We're moving on. Mm-hmm. But it didn't feel like that. It just felt like a missed opportunity.
Well, for one, with Liefeld, that's always how it feels. Mm-hmm. But for two, I think it still goes to that thing where, like, let's not dive too deep into this, or we're just going to walk away from the interview.
I could see that too.
Right?
For sure.
Which makes me think, and this is why this show is so fantastic.
Oh.
Speaking of segues, it makes me think of Alan Moore.
Ooh.
I just read an article. God, I want to say this thing was from like 2012. Talking about like the history of Alan Moore in DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, the new Watchmen show is out on TV.
That sounds like a good book.
It sounds like a great book. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I was reading this article about that, and it linked to this older article. And like there were some quotes in there from Alan Moore, but it wasn't like a straight up interview. And it basically like broke down the history of their relationship. And it's really interesting. Like at one point, DC offered him the rights back to Watchmen. But the stipulation was that he had to allow, other creators to work in the universe. And he said no.
Mm.
And because he said no, they retained the rights. And so I gotta say this. Like, say what you will about Alan Moore, right? Like, even we joke mm-hmm. around about Alan Moore.
Sure.
Alan Moore did a lot for comics.
Mm-hmm.
He almost single-handedly for several years changed comics. Right?
Oh, like, without a doubt.
Nobody was reading Swamp Thing, like none of that stuff, right? And he was probably the first, right? The first UK creator to come over to the States.
Well, one of, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a few of them at the same time, but like I think Alan Moore was the first one that got signed to come over here. And at a time where like nobody was reading comics. And the comics in the mm-hmm. UK were freaking fantastic, right? Like you had Alan Moore and Grant Morrison, Brian Bolan, like all these guys over there. And they came yep. over here and revitalized comics. Anyway, so long story. And say what you will about him, but like you gotta give props to the guy for believing in something and not doing anything to undermine those beliefs. You know what I mean?
Like I think no matter how critical you want to be of him, he was a trailblazer, a revolutionary, completely punk rock, and actually stood up for a lot of people that didn't have a voice.
Sure.
And stood behind a lot of people that I'm sure all these publishers, I'm sure they want to put their own big people into a colorist role, an artist role. And he was one of the few people that were like, no. I love that about him, sure.
And think about it. If he had gotten the rights back, think mm-hmm. about how much money he would have made off of Watchmen and now the TV show.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't care about any of that stuff, right?
No.
What he cared about is having creative control. And if he can't have it completely, then he doesn't want any of it. So I found that really interesting. And, like there was a side note on there that I hadn't even realized. Like the whole thing started with Jim Lee. Before Jim went to DC, like he's the one that originally screwed Alan Moore with the America's Best stuff, which I had no idea.
That I
was
news
to me because you know he was doing them on Wildstorm mm-hmm. for a little while. It was an imprint of Wildstorm,
right?
Yeah, really fascinating. If I can find the article, I'll put in the show notes. But you know, I don't remember things, so I'll probably forget.
Dang it. Dang it. I want to read that.
Where was it? You know what? I think it was on The Verge.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Anyway, so this all goes to segue into the fact that, Nick, I got a subscription to HBO, and I'm watching Watchmen, and it's fucking amazing.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. I don't like doing subscription services, as you know.
Uh-huh.
But the last season of Silicon Valley started up. That's on HBO.
Yep. Yep.
Watchmen started up. That's on HBO.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I might as well. So I did. And so I've been watching those and True Detective, which I had never seen before. True Detective is fantastic.
First season's great.
Yeah, that's
first
what I'm watching.
Great.
I'm on episode 5, I think. Really good. Anyways, Watchmen. Really fantastic. So I watched the first episode, wasn't mm-hmm. quite sure what to think. Because it takes place 30 years after the book.
Neat.
Second episode, I mean, it was good, but I was like, this is not really Watchmen, right? Like, it's just like Watchmen adjacent.
Yeah, episode, it's a pivoted universe.
Right. Episode 2 came out, and I was like, this is even better than the first episode, but it's still not Watchmen. And then we got to the third episode, and then I said, oh shit, this is Watchmen. Because in episode 3, spoilers. Are you ready for spoilers? Do you plan on watching the show at some point?
I am waiting till the season is over so I can binge it.
Fair enough. In episode 3, there is a new character introduced to the series who works for the anti-vigilante task force that the government has set up. And she is a character from the movie and, of course, the graphic novel.
Neat.
Do you want to know who it is?
Yeah, sure.
Spoilers. Silk Spectre 2. Except, of course, she's no longer a vigilante. She's part of the task force to stop vigilantes. There's been like this satellite system set up to Mars so people can send voicemails to Dr. Manhattan. And she calls him every day.
Wow.
And tells him these like quote-unquote jokes that aren't really funny. But they're directly related to the storyline of Watchmen, the movie. And then, and of course, she thinks that, like, Dr. Manhattan doesn't give a shit about people anymore because, you know, he's in Mars doing whatever the fuck. And then he throws a car from space and it lands right in front of her.
And holy Christ.
It was fucking awesome.
This sounds great.
It's really good. Same with, you do see Ozymandias.
Okay.
That whole storyline is really weird. It's developing throughout the season, but it's, for now, not connected to the main storyline.
Okay.
He's kind of in exile, but you don't see this in the first episode, but in the second episode, you learn that he basically has like clones that he's making at home to be his servants. And he's using for experiments.
Wow.
What he's trying to do, we don't know yet. But, yeah, it's really interesting.
It sounds like they've tried to really figure out what would these characters be doing decades after.
Yes.
Because they do sound like this is the root of the character, but we're just going to sort of skew it a little bit.
Yes.
That sounds great.
Oh, my God. It was so creepy. He wrote a play about his whole thing with, what was it, the origin story of Dr. Manhattan?
Mm-hmm.
It was creepy as fuck.
I like this.
He uses his clones to act them out. And he's got one of the clones playing Dr. Manhattan before he turns into Dr. Manhattan and goes into that thing that turns him into Dr. Manhattan and like sets the dude on fire.
Jeez.
And then has one of the other clones to replace him for the rest of the play.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's so really interesting.
Four episodes so far?
I've only seen three. I think maybe four came out tonight or last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Now answer me this.
Yes.
We've discussed the trailer for it.
Yes.
How close in tone is the trailer?
So I didn't like the trailer too much.
Same here. I thought that was just a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's a lot of depth.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's deep.
The trailer was just all an army of Rorschachs.
Yes. And then the army of dudes in white masks, and the yellow masks, the cops. Yeah, the trailer, I don't think, did it justice. So Lindelof is in charge of the show.
Ooh, that's exciting.
From Leftovers and whatever else he did, I can't remember.
Lost.
That's it. So it's got.
Is David Goyer writing it?
I know Lindelof is co-writing.
Okay.
I can't remember who the other writer is.
I like that. I feel bad for Alan Moore, and I'm sure Dave Gibbons probably not getting any shekels.
So funny that you say that, because at the end of the show, talk about sticking it to the man. Watchmen co-created by Dave Gibbons.
Wow. Well, hey, he should be making some money off this, for God's sakes. It's a seminal piece of his work.
He is a, whatever they call it, the consultant for the show.
Well, good.
Like, he's actively involved in developing the show.
He doesn't have to stand on that soapbox with Alan Moore.
Well, it's funny because in that article that I read, there was a quote from Dave Gibbons that was basically like, stick it to the man, we don't need this shit, blah, blah, F the rights.
Oh, yeah. And he was that way for decades. He was that way for decades, dude.
Not no mo.
Well, good. Hey,
the new character is really interesting. There's a few new characters. Looking Glass is my favorite.
Okay.
The backstory is actually cool. So it starts off in Oklahoma, and there's like – it's not a race riot. But basically, Robert Redford became president and set up reparations for African Americans. And so they used that money to like get their own businesses. And a lot of them went to Oklahoma. And of course, there were poor white people that didn't appreciate it. And so they banded together as the 7th Cavalry and basically started murdering all the blacks in Oklahoma. They used the Rorschach journals to like base their ideology.
Wow.
So that's a connection. So they're the ones that wear the Rorschach masks. And then as a result, the senator passes legislation that cops had to wear masks, because the cops actually stopped the cavalry. But then afterwards, they went and basically killed all the cops in Oklahoma.
Jeez.
So they passed this legislation where they have to wear masks so nobody knows who they are, right? So they can be cops and be safe.
As well as then the state doesn't ever get sued because how can you blame one person?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some of that.
But I mean, if you extrapolate it, it's like, you could see a police state developing, especially in the tenor that we have currently.
Yes.
Wow, that's some crazy cool stuff.
So some of the cops that survived became vigilantes. So they still work for the police, but officially they're retired and all have, do their own thing. But then they go to like the secret police meetings in like their vigilante outfits. Don Johnson is in it.
Hell yeah.
Well, he's in the first two episodes.
Aw. Dang it.
he's a chief of police.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's good. It's been really interesting.
Sounds great.
To see how it develops.
Now, can I make two HBO suggestions to you?
Yes.
Since you probably will not carry on and hold on to HBO for a long period of time.
Sure.
The documentary Andre, based on Andre the Giant. Fascinating.
I've seen it.
Oh, you have? Oh,
yeah,
good.
I've seen
good.
That before.
All right.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's a great documentary. And I also really enjoyed, shockingly, I really enjoyed the LeBron James series, The Shop.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, it's him with his business partner in a barber shop, along with like 3 to 5 other celebrities, athletes, talking about like pretty important issues of the day.
Huh.
But it's interesting. It's really good. It's very thoughtful and... sometimes it's jokey, but it's just interesting to listen to huge influencers of, sports, film, newspapers.
So it's like it's like The View, but in a barbershop with guys.
Oh, if you want to go real base, sure. But unlike The View, they actually go a little deeper than that, as well as they aren't so... a personality that everything that comes out of my mouth is the most important thing, so I'm going to talk over everybody that's sitting around here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm going to recommend, if you have Hulu, I'm also going to recommend the Hulu original documentary, which it's been a while. It's been since Firefest. Since I've recommended a Hulu documentary, but I'm going to recommend the one, it's titled Untouchable, and it's based on the story of Harvey Weinstein.
Oh.
And the amount of information that you hear, that's why you got to love a modern documentary. the amount of reporters that have pictures of him or actual film or audio of, so you could not just read what his quote was, but you can hear how he inflects that quote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shocking when he's before the huge scandal, the whole B2 movement, to hear him talk to paparazzi about, I'm going into this restaurant right now. Bob De Niro and me do not want any of you taking a picture the rest of the night. If I ever see a picture appear in any of these papers, you will never work in this town. You will never sell another picture. Have a good night, guys. Jeez. All right. Don't forget who takes care of you. Don't forget. And like, he still wants to come off like the good guy.
Wow.
But the amount of power play that he was doing, there's, and you sit there and listen to like Roseanne Arquette tell her story. And it's just like these actors, these even people that were just like handlers that were supposed to come up and like wake him up, get him ready at Cannes to go out for the film festival. Like, these aren't just women acting and like jumping on this Me Too bandwagon when they're describing their situation that they're in. Holy Christ. That's why I never understand, like, when a woman goes through something like this and she's up giving like an eyewitness account in court. And it's like, do you really think, like, just listening to her tenor and how it is so emotional to relive that, to express everything that was going on 10, 15 years ago. And yet the way it sounds in their voice and tenor is, it isn't like she's back there,
mm-hmm.
but she's reliving it. And you could tell that nerve is, no matter how much therapy, that nerve is still completely raw.
Huh.
It is a shook film. It is, he's effing disgusting. What a slime ball. But then you listen to all these reaccounting stories and it's like, holy shit. Like, this guy was just a predator.
Mm.
He just realized like how he could work things. And then all of a sudden you realize like the story that this one girl has is the same story that can be told by 10 other people.
Right.
And that's the shocking thing. Like, he pulls the almost the same exact story verbatim to 10 people. It wasn't like, ooh, I accidentally walked in the room without my pants on. Oops. it's just shocking. But it's really good. If you have Hulu, highly recommend it.
I will check that out. I do have Hulu for now.
Good.
For now.
Well, check it out and have your wife watch that Misery, whatever the hell it's called. Misery Street, whatever the hell it's called.
She's been watching The Jinx.
Oh, finally, years of me pleading for you to watch that. Oh, my God. It's so good.
It's really good. I was surprised.
How far are you in it?
I think maybe one left.
Oh, so you've already seen the convenience store footage.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Like I said, that's the best because, like, documentaries didn't have convenience store security footage. They didn't, and he's just a crazy person. He's a crazy person. Oh, it's so good. Am I right? Like, you couldn't write that.
Dude, that dude like, is crazy.
If that book came out, you'd be like, this isn't nonfiction. No way. No way!
Yeah, The Jinx is really good. Hats off to you.
Yeah, get HBO just for that. Oh my God, it's so freaking worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, you said I was going to cancel. I've been looking through it. I mean, there's a lot for me to watch on there, so I might keep it for a few months.
Their documentaries are stellar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm not going to ruin anything, but you're at the last episode, and how many times have we discussed the, and I love the trend of documentary series. You get 4 to 6 episodes, 4 to 10 episodes. And how many times have we discussed even that Wild, Wild Life?
Wild Country.
Yeah, Wild Country. Even a stellar documentary like that, both of us have said regarding these documentary series, like, they could have shaved 20-30% off that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we didn't really need the last episode of such and such series. Jinx, I swear to God, even like 15 minutes left of the last episode, you'll be like, what is wrong with this mother effer? Like, it's not the entire, I mean, to their credit, the entire, even the last episode isn't the typical, now typical. And I think that series came out before it became typical, that the last episode is usually just sort of a recap with like a nice button at the end.
Yeah.
Oh no. This one's like, are you kidding me? There's still a reveal at the very end. Are you freaking kidding me? Oh, Robert Durst.
Yeah, he's something.
He is something. Jeez. So good.
But yeah, it's been good. It's been enjoyable.
And the thing about that convenience store, I'm sorry, but like I have a flood of emotions and memories. And dude, I haven't watched it in 3 years. The best thing about the convenience store that he gets caught at is he gets caught shoplifting, what the hell was it? Like a milk and a sandwich. And then the cops come and arrest him before he takes off. And he has like $137,000 in the trunk of his car. You stupid mother effer.
Well, that's when, what's her name? Winona Ryder when she got caught shoplifting like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. They don't do it because they don't have money. They just do it because it's fun, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the thrill.
Yeah. The thrill. There you go.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, but I will just tangentially, regarding Untouchable, they have this, and he works for The New Yorker. David, I don't know if you're familiar, David Archuleta?
Yeah.
Okay, good. He works for The New Yorker, for people who don't know him. He does a lot of the, like, big stories in The New Yorker revolving around, like, media. Mm-hmm. And he is in Untouchable a lot. And I love, like, I actually want to read his books because he definitely knows how to encapsulate, like, stories and scenarios, and he can distill things down very clearly for the viewer. I also watched, and it was an A&E docuseries before, and I think I told you to tell your wife to watch it, but it was around Lacey Peterson and yes. Scott Peterson.
Yep.
And that is the typical documentary series that I wish they could shave off about 20% of.
Right.
The meat of it, the 80%, is fascinating, and I certainly learned a hell of a lot more regarding that. And David Archuleta is in both of those.
Yeah, she just finished that one.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's enjoy it? Yeah, she liked it.
It ain't no Hearst, but whoo, lordy.
Yeah, well, that's the one that she was like, oh, I don't know if this guy did it.
I agree. I came away thinking the same damn thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy when you hear, and I don't think all police officers and detectives do this, but it's pretty crazy when it seems like, and you've seen plenty of documentary series, that the crime procedure that law enforcement has to do, when all of a sudden a case blows up into this huge national spectacle spotlight, mm-hmm. all of a sudden these small town police departments don't know how to do it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, are they messing up? Or do they just really not understand how to follow this procedure correctly? Because they probably, it's such a small little town, they probably never had to do it so much that it became a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought with the Scott Peterson thing. I'm like, wow, where is any fact? Where is any, like, yes, I agree, he doesn't show any emotion when his wife and unborn child disappears. He never shows any emotion to the camera. He never wants to be interviewed. But how can you convict him on that? And it seemed like as soon as the police department, they weren't even tracking down leads. It was just like they hyper-focused on a guy who couldn't express any of his emotions. And they just like zeroed in on him. And like, you know, they had blinders on. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to when you see stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, surely it's a hard job.
For sure.
I mean, I'm watching True Detective. You know what I mean? I know what's up.
Matthew McConaughey, he shows me exactly what's up.
He knows what's up. Man, that show's so good.
That is.
I love how they DH'd them so well.
Yeah, it was a great season. And then when I heard the reviews of season two, I've never watched season two.
Ah.
But I'm like, how can it be bad? Because season one was so good.
It's fantastic. I heard three's good.
And it has good people in it. That's why I want to watch season two. But you know me, I don't want to skip over to season three, even though I heard good things about season three.
So after I finish one, I'll start two and I'll let you know.
Cool. Because those are cool. I like those actors.
Oh, dude. Hell yeah. And what's her name is on there? Oh, God. What's her name? Monica Moynihan.
Yes.
I'm
there with you.
She looks great.
Yeah.
So I tried to. We're not going to talk about Disney Plus.
Uh oh.
But.
Yeah, how was your Disney Plus?
But. I tried to sign up for Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a horrendous experience.
I've heard some horror stories.
Now, granted, they just launched. There's going to be some hiccups. I get it.
Sure.
But I'm that kind of person where, like, if I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And if I can't do it, then you're dead to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to sign up on my Fire TV because it's easy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's right there.
It's supposed to be easy.
It's right there.
That's how I did HBO. You know what I did? I said, get app. So it downloaded it. And it said, do you want to sign up? I said, yes. You're going to be charged whatever it is, $14.99 a month. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Done. I can watch HBO now.
Yeah.
I tried to sign up for Disney Plus. Let me tell you the experience.
Sure. Go ahead.
I try to find the app. Can't find it. I do a search. It finally comes up. So I get it. I download it. It wants me to sign up. So I got to go on this fucking thing with my goddamn remote and put in my email address and my password.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do all that reluctantly because I said to myself, self, it's just going to charge me to Amazon. So, you know, whatever. It'll be easy after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. It says, okay, now you need to approve the channel. Do you want to do that? I said, yeah, $6.99. Perfect. Sign me up. Yeah,
right.
Then it asked me for my goddamn Amazon password.
Oh.
Do you think I remember my Amazon password? You know how long that password is?
I can only imagine.
Matter of fact, let me look this up right now. I will tell you. I guarantee you it's at least 24 characters long.
I don't doubt that. And I'm sure there's a lot of capitals, and I'm sure there's a lot of characters. And
2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 32 characters long. You think I'm going to type 32 characters with a goddamn remote?
Nope. That's how we do it. That's how we do passwords, Dirty Legion.
Nope. So I did not sign up for Disney Plus.
So you didn't watch any Star Wars Mandalorian?
The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
No, I did not watch The Mandalorian, nor will I probably ever watch The Mandalorian now. Disney is dead to me.
Oh, no. Mickey Mouse, cover your ears.
Listen, if I want to buy something, just fucking make it easy for me to buy it.
True.
Everybody you know else is just like, do you want to do this? Yes. Okay. Are you sure? Yes. Okay. You're done.
Okay. Well, let's be fair. This thing was launched yesterday, just for the listener, right? Yesterday?
Yes.
You know what would have cleared up all of this BS?
Hmm.
You know what you do?
Hmm.
Let me answer that real quick. December 1st.
Hmm.
You know what I mean by that? Star Wars, The Mandalorian. You release that mother effer on December 1st, idiot. You don't think. And guess what? That's when you launch Disney Plus, wink, wink. But we're doing a soft launch right now.
There you go. You got it.
November 13th.
You got it.
Or November 12th. Because guess what? There's always going to. And I even told the wife this because she was like. A coworker wanted to buy it and, you know, cause she has little kids and they were just going to plop the kid down. There's the babysitter and it's Disney. Great. But I just couldn't, she couldn't sign in. She couldn't get this, all these hoops. She kept getting error messages, blah, blah, blah. And I said, do you realize where I worked? These two web companies, if you're going to do a site relaunch or you're launching a brand new site like Disney Plus, you don't go and all of a sudden do a site relaunch with a site-wide sale.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. that's too much shit. Well, going to break some.
And not just
and
that.
And guess what? How many people, my point is, how many people that were complaining up a storm were complaining because they couldn't get Darkwing Duck? Or they couldn't get Star Wars The Mandolin? Because all I heard was The Mandolin.
Uh-huh,
I haven't heard that much Mandolin. I haven't heard that much mandolin since REM did Losing My Religion, people. Jimmy, Christmas. And
right.
if they would have just worked through all of their issues, because people would go and they would want to do Star Wars The Mandolin. They want to see IG-89. Sure, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't do that on day one, dum-dums.
Well, and they launched on literally everything possible.
Yes.
Right? So website, on Fire right. TV, on Apple yeah. TV, on Fuck TV,
whatever
like
I have.
Android, iOS, like yep. if it has a screen, you can get Disney yep. Plus.
Like even my buddy was like, "Oh, I do a Fire Stick through my PS4," and
boom,
I'm like,
you
"Sure,
got it.
That Fire Stick should work easily through your PS." Sure.
Yep.
What if it doesn't?
It doesn't.
And then you also have to hope if you're Disney, is that going to go through to the PS4? Is all that back end okay? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? All the mandolin people come over. They don't see the mandolin. They see a little box, a little tile that says, "Mandolin, come in 12-1. I thought you said when this launches. And people might be upset, but you know what they do? They click over one, two tiles, and they watch High School the Musical. Or
Perfect.
They watch Darkwing Duck. Mm-hmm. Not original shows, just one of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you can sort of get in, and then all of a sudden when you're ready to like scream because you can't get into Disney Plus, you mother effers, then all of a sudden you look up on social media and it's like, oh, well, Star Wars The Mandolin, it's not playing until 12-1. Ah, I'm not going to stress over this. Hey, little Johnny, you can't watch Darkwing Duck right now. Sorry. And you go about your day. You don't care. Who mm-hmm. cares? You wouldn't be hanging on like, I tried to get into this mother effer for 2-3 hours. In my head, I'm like, that's when you shut this shit down and you go about your day. You could have read about 20 comics in those 2-3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you're pounding the pavement. Where's my mandolin?
Mm-hmm.
Even though I did hear great things about it.
I heard the mandolin was great.
Yeah, to be fair.
I heard people want a whole band of mandolins.
Yes, but Martin, you know. You don't put that out on day one.
No.
Or, like I said, you say it's 12-1, and that's when it's coming out. That's day one. But then all of a sudden, oh, this is available for your phones. What? I can get this on my phones right now, but I'm not going to be charged till 12-1? Oh, let me go and see if it works for me. Oh, it does work, but it's not working on the iPad. Oh, well, they did say 12-1. Or let me see if it works on the Fire Stick. Oh, it doesn't work on the Fire Stick, but it works on the Apple TV. That's weird. But oh, well, it's not 12-1 yet.
And see, and here's the thing. So I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to go above and beyond. So I sat down on my computer and tried to sign up.
Sure. Yeah.
Error message. Can't sign in.
Due diligence.
Couldn't sign in.
But wouldn't that be okay if they weren't going to charge you till 12-1?
Oh, yeah.
You would just be like, yeah, I'll try tomorrow.
Well, you know when they're charging me now? Never.
Right. Yeah. They lost you.
They lost me, just like CBS.
And then you're like, I'm going to go back to CBS. What the heck?
None of that.
No, no, no.
But see, now my HBO experience was so good that now I might need to get HBO Max.
Nice. What's an HBO Max?
Who knows?
That sounds like Skinamax.
It's the same price as HBO. So why would I keep HBO?
What is HBO Max then?
HBO Max also has the DC stuff. And I don't know. Let me see.
DC Universe?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
HBO Max. Please don't show me a trailer. all of HBO.
Okay.
Rick and Morty, Friends, Top Gear, Fresh Prince.
You're not selling me.
Blockbuster moved. All the Warner Brothers movies, all the DC movies.
Okay.
Studio Ghibli, New Line Cinema, and more.
Ooh. Okay.
For some reason, Sesame Street. Oh, because they're on HBO. That's why.
They are. Yeah. They bought them.
That's going to be HBO Max exclusive now.
Good. Good for them.
Sesame Street.
Yeah, Sesame Street should be out there.
I haven't watched that in 30 years.
They did just do their 50th anniversary show that you can watch on HBO right now.
Oh, good. Oh, here you go. Yeah. All right, here we go, here we go. Warner Brothers, TBS, CNN, Cartoon Network, HBO, Adult Swim, DC, Cinemax, or Max Originals, I guess it's not Cinemax, True TV, and TNT.
So you can get all your seasons of Impractical Jokers for a low, low price?
My favorite show. I have to watch it. I'm watching it right now. You just don't know.
Is that just the trailer?
Kidding. God, I fucking hate that show.
Is that the trailer? Oh, my God.
Yes. But I will say, I mean, Disney Plus, great deal.
Yeah.
But
they got a lot of content.
I will never know.
But I, like I said, that's the key phrase, December 1st. Why did you not do a soft launch? Why? Why?
What was that, the George Bush quote? It was like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, fool me again. Is that what he said?
it was a song lyric.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was like, fool me once, I'm not gonna do this again, or something like that. Like, it was some dumb song lyric.
Let's see, here we go. I think I found
it. Oh, that. I won't be fooled again. That's the song. I won't be fooled again.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Yeah, there you go. And he even does the cadence, I won't be fooled again. Oh, my God.
Oh, that guy. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's hilarious. He's an artiste now, you know.
Yes, I do know. I do.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's all such bullshit. Like, when this guy was president, everyone fucking hated him. Now he's just like a fucking teddy bear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all fake. Just whatever.
That's just, you know, how history perspective changes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people would welcome him back, considering the current administration.
Oh, we have an administration?
No, we don't. We're lawless. We put on masks.
Might as well be.
Hey, another, if you want to peel a couple tears.
Oh, yes.
And this is a HBO thing as well. The Judd Apatow directed Gary Shandling documentary.
I heard that was good.
Very, very good. And you will peel a couple tears.
Really?
For sure. Yeah. But it's really, really good. I mean, Shandling definitely chronicled his life pretty well. And then Apatow, it's like a love letter to Gary Shandling.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And they had a lot of footage that I've never seen before. And that's definitely in my wheelhouse of, like, that's when I discovered comedy, right around that era. Mm-hmm. So I sort of absorbed it like a sponge. And whenever I saw anything that was different or new, I would just voraciously take that in. And there was stuff that I've never, ever seen.
He died fairly recently, right?
Only been a few years. Yeah, 4 years ago,
four
maybe?
Years? Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. I will put this on my list. That sounds good.
It is. It is.
It's scary. Oh, it's based on the diaries.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, I will check that out for sure.
I'm trying to
think what else, if I watched anything else or read anything else. Not really, I don't think.
Really?
No. I've been busy with NaNoWriMo and coding this app because I couldn't find like a good newsreader app, so I made my own.
Good.
Yeah. And work sucks. God.
Well, that stinks.
Dude. Oh, see, it's been so long since we talked. Breaking news. My boss is retiring on Friday.
What?
Yeah. That mother effer.
Dang it.
I'm very upset.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm very upset. He sent out an email Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
He didn't give anyone any time.
He sent me a text. He's like, you should check your email.
Do you think he told the upper ups like months ago
so they could get ducks in a row? I'm sure he did.
It's just shocking he wouldn't have shared it with his direct reports.
Well, I mean, like, I kind of figured, but he hadn't said anything.
Sure.
But I kind of figured it was coming when that lady showed up.
How old is he?
Mid-50s.
Dang it, he's retiring?
Yeah.
Golly, he's living the life. I'm jealous.
Yep.
Dang.
Yep, he's retiring.
So now it's just the lady and you, huh?
Yeah. Well, supposedly she's temporary. We'll see. We'll see how temporary that is.
Right.
I might make her temporary. I will Disney Plus her out of my life. But
you will be CBS no access.
Yeah. Yeah. She's trying to get in my good graces. She offered to buy us all lunch.
Well, that was nice.
I don't like nice.
Just, you know, open up that steel cold heart of yours. Let her in.
Look, no, there's no cold steel heart. There's reality. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
And niceties in business, you got to be careful.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll worm their way in.
Yeah. I don't like it. Matter of fact, my wife was watching The Office last night.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an episode that was very reminiscent of what I just said. So we'll see. I'm playing it by ear.
Smart. Tentatively accepting.
Very tentatively.
Yes, yes.
Very tentatively. All right, let's wrap this up, Nick.
Wait, hey, can I just do one quick thing?
Of course.
Because I don't want to do it next episode. I want to tie a bow on this subject.
Yes.
My reading habits, I have been, comic book wise, I wrapped up Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh.
Both compendiums. I don't have the third yet. Jeez. I will be getting the third, but I also wrapped up the Crisis on Infinite Earth main event.
Mm-hmm.
I also read, and I don't know if you ever read this. I would assume you did. The Spider-Man Clone Conspiracy.
Yeah, I read it when it came out.
Yeah, I never read it before. So that was fantastic. Anything clone, sign me up. So I did read that. That was great. I read the first volume of Red Hood and the Outlaws for the Reaper. I can see how so many people raved about that. And then I also reread Red Hulk, Mayan Rule by Jeff Parker and Dale Eaglesham.
Jeez.
So good. Oh, my God. I miss Jeff Parker writing Hulk. Ooh, so good. That is that's my jam. And I just wrapped up last night. I read the first volume of Cable by James Robinson.
Oh, wow.
So
how was that?
That was really good. James Robinson just freaking rocks. And to put him in charge of a character that can jump through time at a whim,
mm-hmm.
and he's chasing somebody who is jumping through time. So every issue, Cable is trying to track down somebody who's jumping through time. He's collecting five pieces of a magic sword that will cut through time that he can just like, he can bring things in, or he can walk through and like be into a different time. And they did the typical, and I loved when Jason Aaron threw out, I think it was one of his events, he threw out like just the term, and it never came to fruition, of a Thor war. And I was like, that is such a cool image in my head. I want that. James Robinson did the same thing that he did. And it was just dropped. Nothing was said, but he mentioned an Eternals Inhumans war.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I so want to see that. Why isn't that available? And then one of the last issues in volume one, James Robinson also said the future of Deathlocks. And I'm like, I want to see that. Like, that sounds so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was Carlos Penchenko doing the art.
I'm going to have to see if I can track this down.
Yeah, and I also, I think Volume 2 has Ed Prism doing the writing, and I just came off of one of his previous books, and I was like, oh, he's writing Cable? Okay, sign me up.
Yeah, he's been doing, he was doing X-Men stuff.
Yeah,
he might be doing one of the new books.
He must have dipped his toe first into Cable and then jumped over to the big books.
This is recent.
Which one?
The James Morrison Robinson Cable.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally missed this.
It's really fun because when he's chasing this villain called Conquest, he's chasing this villain through time, And every time he goes to a new time period to get one of these pieces of this sword, this magical sword, mm-hmm. he gives the natives futuristic weapons. So mm-hmm. he'll go to like a Mayan culture, and when Cable appears, all of a sudden here's this Mayan culture that have these really cool, like translucent blade wings. Or he goes to one of the most interesting ones was Conquest goes to Russia and meets up with Jesus. Who the hell is that Russian leader who was the priest? Mm-hmm. That was completely cuckoo. Oh, it's late and my head is soupy. But he goes, it isn't Stalin. Rasputin.
Ah.
He meets up with Rasputin and he gives his troops cyber horses. And I was like, oh my God, if I'm going to see a robotic horse. And then sure enough, like 3 pages later, yes, they're robotic horses. It's so good. You were just talking about Alan Moore. Is it going to change anything? No. Is it even James Robinson level of Starman? No. But when James Robinson is having fun, oh my God, and he is having fun on this one.
So Ed Brisson is co-writing New Mutants right now.
Ooh,
which
I like
is
that.
My least favorite of the new X-Men books.
Oh no.
Sorry.
Is it the story or is it the art?
The story.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Ed Brisson, and the reason I just read, he just did the new Ghost Rider.
Yes.
And I like the new Ghost Rider. I don't know if you read it, but
I have not.
I thought the story was okay. Anything with Danny Ketch, I'm all over Danny Ketch. But it has both him and Johnny in it. I don't recall who did the art, but the art was really wild, but in a sort of controlled way, not like an anime way.
Right.
But the colors, I don't know who did the colors, but the colors are freaking off the page. It looks like moving flame, and it looks like melting metal. Like, whoever's doing those colors, mamacita, they are beautiful.
Let's find out.
That is exciting. That I don't know if I want to check out the New Mutants, because I do trust your opinion, but if it comes on sale, I like this Ghost Rider enough to be like, yeah, I'll try that. And I did wrap up, and I don't know if you read it, the Black Widow miniseries by the Soska sisters.
Yeah, that was not bad.
I thought that took that take on a character that you're pretty familiar with. The sad thing is most people are familiar with the movie version, which mm-hmm. is not my version.
Mm-hmm.
And this one felt like a good hybrid between old Black Widow and Hollywood Black Widow. Like if that was a movie, if that miniseries became her movie, that I would be very happy with that.
Yeah, I'm curious how they're going to do the TV show.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, I'll never watch it, but I'm still curious.
Never say never.
You know, when Moon Knight comes out, I'll do Disney Plus.
There you go. Back in. I knew we could bring you back. I knew it. But you know me, going back to the Black Widow series, the miniseries, mm-hmm. and I say, how many times have I said this? All a comic book needs is an appearance by the Taskmaster, and I'm
hell yeah
there.
Hell yeah!
And the Taskmaster barely was in it, but her interaction with the Taskmaster, and I thought the Soska sisters, their version of Sabretooth, mm-hmm. I thought was so good. Mm-hmm. I want a modern Sabretooth. I don't know if anyone's sort of tried to put him in a non-80s, 90s version, but this Sabretooth was fantastic.
I like the Age of Apocalypse Sabretooth.
Ditto. For sure. Yeah, so sorry to make it go long, but I really wanted to get that off my plate because I read so much. But Crisis on Infinite Earths, if people were debating on getting those compendiums, after reading the compendium, there are literally one panel here, one panel there, or two or three panels that those two or three panels that Perez drew is a complete issue or two issues in the compendium. But they're just more fleshed out. They're more, it takes the same characters and just puts a breath to it instead of just one panel. And it feels like now I don't know if I could read the actual event without also reading the compendiums because they added so much to it.
Right.
It's the way it should be. It's that was a crossover. That was everything sort of mattered. It just depends on could a, how old was I? 15, 16? Could a 16-year-old Nick afford all of those issues? No, I couldn't.
Yeah, it's a lot of issues.
Yeah, but oh my God, did they all so interconnect, and it was great. Very rewarding.
I need to get back to that.
Yeah,
I'm way behind you.
That's okay. Dude, who's in a rush?
I know. There's no rush.
Right. You had the Red Book to read, and I respect
so good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. We're going to wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up.
You can, of course. Oh, wait. No, that's not how it goes. See, it's been so long, I forgot.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to...
Thank you for listening to the Nerdy Legion podcast with host Martin Ferretti.
Nick Wetmore.
And your loyal servant, Nick Wetmore. Hello. You can find Martin Ferretti at hello at nerdylegion.com because he loves emails. Or on the Twitter machine. By the way, he's not really on the Twitter machine, but it's at GeekVod. You can find me, your loyal Serbian Nick, on the Twitter machine. Use my name. That's right. Nick Wetmore. Hello. Until we come back and fill your ear holes with dread. And we won't be doing this in 10 days. We will be there next week. Promise. Kiss, kiss. Love you.
Bye-bye.